So the host is important for a couple of reasons. And number one, we finally got a Dr. Crusher episode.
Yeah, we finally did, didn't we?
And, you know, it's all right.
It's an episode of its time. I think that's the best way I can say it. It has...
Well, why do you say that?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of really... We've talked a lot about, like, any time, you know, we have a Troy episode, she turns into very giggly. And, you know, we've already had the scene of, you know, Troy and Crusher doing dance aerobics, you know. And now we have them in the hairstylist talking about boys. And, I mean, like... It does this every so often.
And I do need to say that Troy also did this in the mind's eye as well when she was trying to pump Troy for information about his rise of fucking. And I don't remember Troy being quite this gossipy before, and I'm not sure that I like this character choice for her.
Yeah,
either.
But they're also not... See, it's one thing if... I mean, there is a degree to which, you know, the Waxana Troy is gossipy and into everybody's business. And it makes sense, honestly, if... Deanna Troi has a little bit of that trait.
Sure, like, yeah.
Especially given her job and, you know, given her abilities, you know, we can see her being very interested in who's fucking who on this, you know, spaceship, even under the guise of, well, I need to know what's going on, you know, with the interpersonal relationships. Like, I'm fine with that, but this, it doesn't make it, I don't know, she just gets into a weird... It toes a line that makes it kind of creepy in a way. Like, it's not,
well,
it's not professional enough and it's not funny enough.
Well, number one, I think the show has not done enough work to make Troy and Crusher have a friendship that seems organic and real, number one.
Yeah.
Because they don't have that many scenes together. And when they do, it's usually Troy and Crusher talking about men or Troy pumping Crusher for information about the man that she's currently sleeping with.
Which, as I said, is, you
which
know,
is problem-
of its time. Yeah.
Right, which is problematic for a couple of reasons. I don't think we really need to go into why, because we've talked about it a lot before. Suffice it to say that having only two main cast members that are women constantly, whenever they have a scene together, they're just talking about dudes they're having sex with, that's problematic. But as you said, it's of its time. It was 25 years ago. And the scene where they do talk, you said it sounded creepy. I think it's creepy, but it's also...
It's just creepy,
it's kind
because
of,
they're not friends in
a way.
Yeah,
it's,
like,
it's also aggressive. Like, it seems like Troy is almost baiting her for some reason.
Yeah, and Troy is also in the... There's something about him, and, you know, Troy doesn't trust Odon. For whatever reason. And,
sure, that's fine.
And, you know, it is because he is hiding something, which turns out to be a relatively benign thing. I mean, if the events of the plot hadn't happened, it's not like his secret was a dangerous secret.
Dangerous to him, maybe, but no one else.
Well, I mean, I don't even think it's just the way his life is, you know. You know, it's not like he's hiding, you know, he's a spy or he's, you know, going to kill everybody on the ship or anything like that. Like, it's just a fact about his biology he's not completely honest about, and she's getting some weird readings from that. Like,
sure.
Okay. But yeah, she's doing a gossipy thing, but in a way trying to figure out if Crusher knows anything, or she's trying to get Crusher to spy on her boyfriend or something like that is, and so it's, like I said, it's a little too gossipy to be businesslike, and it's a little too cutting to be gossip.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and I think that scene particularly is a misfire. I think the whole episode is kind of a misfire. I like it,
I like the concept of this race that is these two beings that have a symbiosis or whatever to
the
them.
The Trill, yeah.
Yeah, because we've already seen a Body Snatchers plot in this series that was very bad, and this is going into the way their civilization works. There's a lot of questions I have, actually, and I don't know, the biggest question is to what degree is the host conscious? And I mean, we don't really have any scenes of Riker after at the end of the episode, do we?
No, I don't think so.
No, and that was my question, like, because, you know, does Riker, is it a combination of the two of them? Is Riker just kind of sitting back in his body? Like, that's a very important question for me about this society, that they don't answer because they're too interested in the gossipy bits. You know what I mean? I think it's one of those, the episode focused on the wrong things.
I think that's interesting because, you know, I was reading something about this episode and they said that the original conception of this episode, this was written by someone who just, I think, sent a spec script and never wrote again for the show. It's a decent script.
Yeah.
It focused more on the, you know, sort of the war and this aspect of Odan. And the romance was not in the plot at all. And, you know, I've talked a lot about how The Next Generation really sort of transcended itself and became a classic television show when Michael Piller came on board in the third season and started to put the focus on character-based drama.
Yes.
And putting in this romance, of course, is in that line. I just think that they could have found a slightly different personal story to tell about Odan and Crusher that wasn't romantic. Because I think that the script does need that. I don't think it would be interesting to just have an episode about a random ambassador guest star stopping a war that, frankly, we don't care about.
Oh,
hey.
But I mean, they do take it to a lot of very interesting areas, but not enough. I mean, it's funny. Watching this episode, there are some very strong areas of subtext that are not really mined at all. I mean, there is a point when Troy is convincing Crusher to accept love from someone who is wearing the body of her ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
I mean, that scene is there's almost Mad Men levels of subtext in that scene. And then later you have, you know, Picard talking to Dr. Crusher and saying, you know, I'm your friend. We can talk about this, which the two of them had a relationship. Odan is wearing his first officers. Like, there's a lot of resonances there that this episode doesn't seem quite aware of.
Yeah, I don't know if it's not quite aware of them because, of course, you know, it was a person who sent in a spec script and it was worked on by staff writers. Yeah. So, of course, they knew this stuff. Yeah. And I think, you know, part of that just has to do with the running time. I don't know if they really wanted to make this an episode about that or not. I think that the meat of the episode is really about Crusher's feelings about Odan and whether or not love can transcend physical form. And, you know, as an episode that's about that, I think this is probably not the best version of this that we could have gotten. I don't want to go away from this, but I do want to talk about the Trill, because at the beginning of the episode, I said this was an important episode for two reasons. And the second reason is the Trill.
They recur.
They do. And you had a lot of questions about them,
which
is good. And you have questions about the way that their society operates and all this kind of stuff.
I thought that the host was going to be just like a shell, but the host introduces herself at the end with, and apparently has a personality that is not Odan. So it's, again, that's my question. Are there they two beings that fuse? I mean, there's the scene in Picard's quarters when he says, oh, you're sounding a lot like Will Riker. Is that just because he's saying something that's very, you know, determined and, you know, proactive? Or is that because there are aspects of Will Riker that are coming to the forefront here?
It's one of those things where they sort of retcon the Trill. And this version of the Trill is kind of problematic in some ways. And there's a main character in Deep Space Nine that's a Trill.
Okay.
And, you know, I'll talk more about that when we get to Deep Space Nine in a few months. But basically, what happens is they change the Trill to be slightly different from what we see in this episode. And so they take sort of the idea of a joint species, quote unquote, and the idea of this sort of symbiont relationship. And they do some really interesting things with it. Yeah. But it's something that is quite different from what we see in this episode.
This seems like something they intended to be a one-off and didn't really fully think. But again, there are too many. This is an interesting take on the parasitic brain slugs, you know, that I've not really seen that much of. Not that I've done a ton of sci-fi reading of that particular branch, but that's something that we haven't seen as much. It's a more interesting take. It's a more
mostly Tumblr porn, I think.
Yes, exactly. No, but I mean, anytime you think about a relationship like this, it's always the slugs are trying to take over. I mean,
right? Like we saw in Conspiracy.
Yeah. The only other time I think of, I mean, there's a Babylon 5 episode where they have a species like that, but it's people who willingly you know, become hosts to this in order to help their culture spread and to get a sense of meaning to their lives. And that right. was a – that's – those type of things are more interesting takes on this rather than, you know, well, we're going to take over your brain, you know. It's not a simple Puppet Masters thing.
It's not clear in this episode, but my take on this has always been this version of the Trill, they subsume the host's personality completely. So I always got the impression that – Odan is saying, I am not Odan. I am not Odan. Odan is this thing. It seems to me that the symbiont is the person and the host's personality. I think that they are people, and I think that the hosts
have
distinct personalities like you or me, but once the symbiont becomes integral to their being, it's totally subsumed now,
which gives a much more dark implication right. to the society than, again, if it had been, it was a true symbiosis. If they had, it was a melding of the two personalities, or if the host is an empty shell.
Right. Because I don't know that you could really characterize this as a symbiotic relationship.
That in that case, yeah, no matter how willing because the implication is that this woman at the end has lived 20 years and then is just going over and, you know, and sure, culturally, that's maybe fine for what she's doing. But for you or me, that's very fucked up.
Yeah, exactly. And I will say that, you know, again, I don't want to go too far into what the Trill become mm-hmm. in Deep Space Nine, okay. but they course correct.
They have that. They have a second draft that's much better of the species.
Because this is actually kind of a much darker episode than I think, you know, a lot of people might give it credit for.
Yeah.
You know, we talked a lot about sort of in the beginning about Troy and Crusher talking and how that seems sort of catty almost and very mean-spirited, at least on Troy's part. And I think there's a lot of dark stuff with Odan and the way that Odan goes from body to body without really seeming to care that much.
I mean, I think he does to a degree because, I mean, I think about him, he is very, on one hand, he is respectful about Riker's body because he says towards the end, like, when he's realizing that, you know, it's rejecting, he says, you know, no matter what, like, happens, like, remove me. Like, he's done enough. Like, we've hit the limit there, you know? And, you know, he's not trying to take, he is comfortable dying if it means Riker can live once he's done what he's done. On the other hand, I'm not too comfortable with the idea that he uses Riker's penis to have sex with Crusher.
Okay, why?
Because especially wondering where is Riker in all of this. And that's, that's something that I can see why they wouldn't have put an ending Riker conversation, because they would have to have the two of them deal with each other. But, you know, dude, Riker and Crusher would not have sex with each other, you know, on an average day. Just that's not where their relationship goes.
On an average day, yeah.
Well, you know, there are a lot of non-average days on the Enterprise. But, again, his body did have sex with her. And she did, while she did emotionally have sex with Odan during that.
Sure.
She did physically make love to Will Riker.
I guess,
and
yeah.
That, and there are a lot, basically, no matter what, that's some baggage.
I think it's baggage for Crusher more than Riker, because I think there's a couple interesting things there. You know, ethically speaking, I don't think that Odan did anything wrong, because Riker willingly agreed to host Odan. I think if he didn't know the exact particulars of the consciousness aspect of this and whatever, I'm sort of on the side that this version of the Trill symbiont doesn't allow for the host to have any sort of consciousness whatsoever.
In other words, Riker went through a couple of days of just...
He was asleep. Yeah. He was under anesthesia or something,
yes,
basically.
That's the experience he had. Sure.
He went to sleep. You know, well, I mean, I guess he didn't go to sleep because they didn't put him under anesthesia during the surgery. But in effect, he went to sleep as soon as the Trill joined with him.
The
Trill was removed, he woke up and he didn't have any remembrance of anything that happened. I truly think that's what happened. Odan, on the other hand, I think, you know, there is an argument to be made that Odan knew that the body was always going to be a borrowed one, and so he should have been a little more respectful of it. But
you borrow somebody's car for the weekend, you know, because
you don't have sex in it.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. I think that's, yeah. There you go.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's a little different because, of course, you know, Riker did willingly go into it, and yeah. So, you know, while I don't think O'Dan did anything,
but I mean,
wrong,
let's put it this way: if O'Dan was able to communicate with Riker beforehand and say, you know, they were saying, you know, if Riker had put up a list of do's and don'ts you can do with the body, he probably might not have said, look, just don't fuck anybody with this.
I don't know. Would he, though?
Riker is a pervert.
Yeah. I mean, think about that. I think he would have been like, all right, dude, thumbs
just,
up.
Just film it.
Yeah, maybe. Hey. Maybe they did. No, I know. I can go either way. I don't think O'Dan did anything wrong necessarily, but I think it may have been it's a gray area, let's say.
It's the kind. Yeah, it's the kind of thing where Riker wouldn't necessarily be thrilled with O'Dan doing that, but he wouldn't be upset.
But then let's not forget Crusher's role in all of this. I mean, Crusher has a part to play in this as well.
Oh, yeah.
She could have put the brakes on it, and she didn't. So
no,
what does that mean?
You know, it means that she was – see, in that scenario, I think one of – this is where the episode contradicts itself, and I think we need to kind of get into the ending here because, again, this episode is of its time.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the ending.
Here's what – okay. Obviously, Crusher and O'Dan are not going to continue having a relationship past this episode. It's not that kind of show.
Sure.
Fine.
They're not going to be sending subspace love letters to each
other. No. Where I thought this episode was going to go, honestly, was the host was going to be a child or even Wesley's age.
Oh.
Yeah. And then at that point, you know, like I figured I honestly assumed that the host was grown in vats and it was, you know. Again, we could have gotten a very easy, oh my God, your body is my son's age, you know, I can't continue this, you know, and that would have been fine. Number one, that would have been a completely legitimate reason for her not to want to continue that relationship. Here's the thing. The host that they pick, the lady, is really pretty.
Sure.
And Crusher has these extremely intense feelings towards O'Dan.
Yeah.
And the action of this episode has gone to say that O'Dan is not his body. He is this. I mean, the parasite is essentially a soul. And this episode has gone so far as to say that Crusher is in love with the soul of O'Dan. And suddenly the soul of O'Dan is in a really pretty lady. Well, that's too icky for her. She comes across to the 2014 viewer as a little too conservative. I think if she had had such an intense connection to O'Dan, that this episode has goes out of its way to say transcends the physical body that O'Dan is in, I think that's a little bit, I don't know, it seems very provincial.
Yeah, but we're not talking about friendship here.
No, I know that. I know that.
And there is a degree to which there is a sexual component to any romantic relationship,
yes.
Or it's not a romantic relationship. So,
yeah, no,
I think the way it's written is a little tone deaf, but
yeah,
I think that her choice makes sense because Dr. Crusher is not bisexual.
No.
And Dr. Crusher is not a lesbian.
No.
So I think it's a little too much to expect her to be on board with that.
No, frankly. I know. It's, again,
I mean, although then again, I think that it's a little problematic to have her sleep with Riker because there has never been an indication that she's attracted to Riker.
Yeah, that's...
Now, you know, there is a degree to which, you know, we're talking about two different things here. We're talking about differences of degree, really, not of kind. Well, we're talking about differences of degree and kind because I think that everybody has a sexual orientation.
Yes.
They have a gender that they prefer unless they're bisexual. And then within that, there are, you know, people that you're attracted to, right? I'm not attracted to every man I see. You're not attracted to every man you see. You know, my dog is not attracted to every lady dog he sees. Or maybe he is. I don't know.
He is attracted to most of the lady people he sees.
That is true. But if I, let's say, knew somebody for a long time and, you know, was not physically repulsed by him, and they, you know, he had strong feelings for me and I was worn down or whatever and eventually decided that I was in love with him as well, you know, even if he was not my physical type or whatever, that's kind of what happened, I think, with O'Dan and Riker and Crusher. Whereas, you know, if someone that I was in a romantic relationship with transitioned from male to female, I would probably have a problem with that.
I could see that, yeah.
And so not everybody is bisexual.
No, and, you know, I certainly agree with that, and I certainly understand that. It's... And they need, and then they only have a few minutes to wrap it up at this point of the episode.
And
anyway.
I also think you're talking about 1991. And that's 1991
well, that's
is
what
not,
I'm saying. You know. This episode is very much of its time.
Yeah,
Crusher comes off really cold, and to me as a viewer in 2014, a little too cold to this, and she doesn't even seem to. Like, it's not even too weird. She's not even considering, well, look, all right, let's go to dinner and let's make out a little bit. If it's horrible, then all right. But, she has made it very clear in this episode, again, in the scene with Troy, that she does love O'Dan. Whatever O'Dan's soul is, the person that he or she is, the person that O'Dan is. And I think... The fact that Crusher doesn't even seem willing to try makes that love seem a little less intense, I guess.
Yeah, I guess, but I don't see it. Because if I think someone I was in a relationship with switched bodies and was a different gender, I wouldn't be able to get past that, frankly.
Okay.
I will ask you one question, though, about this. Would it change your opinion of Crusher's attitude at the end of the episode if... the host and the symbiont formed a new personality?
That would not change. That would be a much
That's interesting.
That would make sense. Yeah, because it would alter, because the soul is not an integral Odin slug.
Right.
It's a combination of, and therefore Odin in his father, Odin in, you know, the man we meet at the beginning of the episode, Odin in Riker, and Odin in this woman are four different people in a way.
Yes.
And therefore, and the implication then is that O'Dan and Riker is the strongest attraction for her, which is interesting. But yeah, that would make sense because this episode makes it seem like it's just an integral O'Dan.
Yeah.
And it's an integral O'Dan she's rejecting.
Yeah, and I think, you know, while I don't, like I said, like I don't disagree with Crusher's reaction at the end of the episode, I think that, you know, 90s Star Trek in general,
yeah,
doesn't do gay themes or transgender themes well, and never does.
Yeah.
And so, and again, this is 1991, this is very early.
Yeah, it's not
so
really
if you
on
think
anyone's
about,
radar.
Right, if you, well, I don't know if I would go that far.
It's, but for most of the mainstream viewers who were going to watch this in the 90s, they neither expected nor necessarily wanted nor needed it to have a very sensitive treatment of gay themes. That just wasn't on their list, you know?
And I think, frankly, I think if you put it into the proper context, I think perhaps for 1991, this was,
yeah,
you know, a bit progressive.
Okay.
I mean, she doesn't like throw things at O'Dan and tell her to leave the room and say she's disgusted. She just kind of like, hey, I wish, you know, maybe someday I'll be open to this, you know, and for 1991, maybe that's what they could expect realistically.
Yeah. Again, making the hoax be a child would have alighted all of that without making it nearly, I don't know, wouldn't have been at all controversial if they had had it be a child and her say, no, I can't do this. Like, sorry.
Yeah, I guess.
But?
I will give this one 5 Trill Symbionts.
I'll give it a 4.
Okay.
I do really like the scenes in the, we've had a couple of scenes in the hairdressers, and we see every so often they're just doing mundane stuff. And I always like that because I like just, like, they have this little, you know, toenail painting beam and stuff like that. I love seeing stuff like that. It's just really nice just to see what the tech using everyday things is.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about The Mind's Eye, which is another Geordi gets kidnapped by Romulans plot.
You know, it's just when we had the season 2 finale where the Romulans are, we're back.
One.
Season 1 finale where the Romulans are, we're back. I was excited to see the Romulans. I am so sorry I was excited to see the Romulans.
I don't get what the Romulans were doing.
Just causing shit.
Like, are the Romulans just teenagers, basically? They just want to cause trouble?
They want anarchy in the UK, man.
Yeah.
I didn't like this episode.
Their plot was extremely convoluted.
Yeah. Well, that's the Romulan way. I mean, have you noticed the show does that? Like, it gives these wonderfully intricate Baroque schemes to the Romulans that nobody would do in real life, that only work from a plotting script point of view.
Right.
And then, but they always have a character saying, oh, well, that's such a Romulan thing, you know? Oh, that's so Romulan, you know? Those wacky Romulans, they just overplot themselves, and that's supposed to make it okay.
I don't even really know where to start with this episode because there's so much about it that is just...
extremely
wacky.
Yeah, they again, it's one of those that maybe has a couple of good ideas, but this script is a goddamn mess. Let's face it. The plot is just all over the place.
I mean, I liked it. I think it's entertaining, and I think that if you don't think about it too much, it makes sense.
Hey! I know, and this is... We've talked a lot about the differences between TV now and TV then, and we have said, like, you know, if this is a filler episode, it's an entertaining filler episode. It's a watchable filler episode. And it's Sunday night. I'm going to watch the Star Trek. Okay.
Sure.
Geordi got into a scrape and he got out of it and there were Klingons. Like, it can do that much. So, yeah. But at the same time, it wasn't that... I personally didn't find it that entertaining because I'm starting to get tired of Klingons. And I know we're only in season 4.
Yeah, you can't really get tired of Klingons. Oh, well, you know, next week you're going to have fun.
Oh,
well. No, I get what you're saying, and
And we've seen this particular Klingon plot several times. I mean, at this point, I'm fairly convinced that every Klingon is working with Romulans.
Well, secretly. You're going to have to wait until DS9 to really see another Klingon plot, because I think TNG has one or two.
Really?
But... Yeah, the Klingons in TNG are fairly one note.
Okay.
I think in Deep Space Nine they flush them out better, and one of my favorite characters in Deep Space Nine is in fact a Klingon. So,
oh, you mean one plot, not one episode?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Because I was gonna say I thought there were a lot of Klingon episodes.
Yeah, one plot, not one episode. Okay. We've already seen a few. I think, you know, the thing about this episode really is that it's not anything that we needed to see, I guess. And yeah. You know, it's one of those things where we already know that there's a certain faction of the Klingon Empire that is working with the Romulans. We already know that the Romulans are the fly in the ointment of the Alpha Quadrant, and they really want the Klingons and the Federation to be at each other's throat again, yeah, because then the Romulans will not be constrained by this alliance, even though the alliance doesn't seem that solid. Even though they don't really seem to be doing that much together or working together or really doing anything except the alliance is, we're not going to shoot at each other.
Yeah, and I get the sense that one of the main things that I get from this is that if the Romulans were fighting the Federation, they'd also have to be fighting the Klingons because of this alliance, and vice versa. And the Romulans can't fight the war on two fronts.
Sure.
And if they're... I think the sense that I get is the Romulans want the Klingons and the Federation to fight each other, lose a lot of resources in a war that, you know, frankly, the two of them fighting each other is going to decimate both armies. And that's just going to fight one or the other, you know, pick out which one is weakest and then go to the next. So,
sure.
I mean, that in that sense, that makes sense what the Romulans are doing to me.
Yeah, I suppose so. You know, and I think that on the level of, you know, plotting and scripting, I think it works fine. I tend to like mysteries where we already know what's going on. We watch the other characters try and figure it out. I think that if the characters are ones that you care about and they're intelligent, it's fun to watch. So I like...
But this is a Geordi episode, so...
Well, it's a Geordi episode, but I don't really think Geordi has a lot to do in it. And, you know, I think a lot of it is a Data episode.
Yeah.
I think that I like seeing Data solve mysteries. I think he's really fun just watching him. You know, I like seeing Picard out Klingon Klingons. There's a lot of elements in the episode. There are a lot of individual scenes in the episode that I find very strong.
I like the governor character.
Sure, yeah.
He's the kind of antagonist Klingon who respects Picard, and I like that.
I like that Picard is standing up to the governor and is cursing at him in Klingon and all this kind of stuff.
And then the governor is admitting but not admitting that he's All right, good job. I like that.
It's fun.
This is fine. Again, it's not.
You know, there's that scene in the episode towards the end where Geordi walks into the ambassador's quarters and we suddenly find out the ambassador's a traitor.
Yeah.
That worked for me as well as anything else did.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's like I said, on a plot level, it's satisfying enough. I think if you start talking about it and thinking about it, I think you'll see a lot of plot holes in it. But...
Yeah, but the problem is I co-host a podcast in which I think and talk about these Star Trek episodes. So,
oh, you do? Who do you do that with?
Oh, there's some dude. His name is Barrick Leisure.
Oh, he sounds like a jerk.
He is. That's the thing. It's hard doing this kind of a show and just taking a silly filler episode as a silly filler episode.
Yeah.
Which is, again, going with not every episode was intended to be a masterpiece. We had to file something that week, and all right, here's a fun little script about Geordi getting into a scrape.
Well, I think it's funny because, you know, when we started this show, when I first had the idea for the show, you know, I knew that Star Trek, even these kind of episodes, could stand up to a little scrutiny just because of the world building, the depth of characterization, you know, the acting, you know, there's a lot of good stuff in here, even in a sort of middling episode like this. I think when, you know, we get to Voyager and Enterprise, I think that will become more difficult. And I think that perhaps these episodes will get quite a bit shorter.
we'll have animated series episodes that are longer than Enterprise episodes.
We may, actually.
It'll just be 10 minutes going, what the fuck? New Enterprise is out of it. Then Tuvok was all that.
I mean, Tuvok is not an Enterprise.
I don't know what Enterprise is.
If you follow Trek About on Twitter, and you should, Trek About Show, I've been tweeting a lot about watching Enterprise Season 3 for the first time. And, you know, it's just, it is what it is. But, yeah, I think that, you know, the Mind's Eye is, like you said, it's a solid filler episode. It's there. There's some good stuff in there. I don't know that there's a lot to talk about.
It's interesting because I do a lot of writing in the video game scene, and there's a lot of, you know, theories around in the more avant-garde ends about, you know, are games supposed to be fun? And, you know, can you have a game that's supposed to, you know, be unfun for the player? And this show predicts this in the little game that he's playing at the beginning of the episode with the computer.
Yes.
Who gives the stupidest quiz game I've ever seen, and Geordi is just enthralled by it.
Well, Geordi is a nerd, and Geordi would like that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, this is what nerds like to do. You know, maybe it's not a great idea to be sending random Starfleet officers out in deep space in shuttlecraft, for example. That doesn't seem to be the best policy.
I was going
to
say, you can't get a... There isn't somebody on the security staff that could go with him who needs a break coming up, you know?
I'm sure Worf would really love Ryza.
Oh, no, but not Worf, but I mean, Worf has plenty of people on his staff who would, you know, have some time coming.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, you know, I kind of feel like there's a lot of unspoken stuff in here because, of course, this is, again, the kind of show where they are chafing at the limitations of the self-contained episode. And so, you know, doing something like Family, for instance, which was directly linked to Best of Both Worlds Part 2, and kind of dealing a little bit more with Picard's psychological damage from being kidnapped and made a Borg, you know, I think Geordi would have a lot of psychological damage from being kidnapped by the Romulans, shown, you know, apparently horrific images of, I don't know,
war and torture,
people having their skin peeled off by acid or something. I mean, I don't even know what the hell they were showing him.
I got the sense the acid was what they started with.
Babies and then having their legs broken. I mean, I don't know. I'm just making this stuff up. And then, of course, at the end of the episode, you know, we do get to see him with Troy kind of working through some of his emotions. And so, you know, this does kind of raise unsettling questions about, you know, what's possible in this universe, because there does seem to be the capability for a lot of really horrific emotional and psychological trauma being put on people that, you know, is not easily fixed even in this day and age. And I also think that it's problematic that there doesn't seem to be any repercussions for what the Romulans did.
well, what can they do? Yeah, what kind of repercussions could they have against the Romulans at this point without starting a war, you know? The Federation doesn't want to start a war with the Romulans either.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And I don't get the impression that the Federation and the Romulans have embassies and have really diplomatic relations and things like that. So, but, you know, at the same time, I mean, there are things that they probably could do. But again, this is something that the Federation wouldn't, they wouldn't do the things that usually happen. You know, they wouldn't have a trade embargo with Romulus because they want people to have medical supplies. They want people to have food, you know? So there's not, I mean, they even say this in the episode.
This is just the kind of thing where, I mean, the only possible thing they could have from it is it does strengthen the alliance between the Klingons and the Federation, because, I mean, the Klingon governor is now going to completely trust Picard. Because, you know, Picard said this entire time, you know, they are going to find out that there was corruption from within the Klingon Empire, but that the Federation was on the up and up.
Well, and I think the other thing, too, to point out as well is that, you know, the Klingon Empire really needs to get its shit together. There's a lot of bad apples high up in the government.
That's the other thing, and I don't know if the show ever really goes into that, but they seem to find... they find that, you know, the corruption always goes up a further level and a further level. And meanwhile, King Klingon probably is really a Romulan. But, you know, I don't know. I think it's very interesting that this episode does, as you're right, imply that, I mean, we've said a few times this is a much more civilized version of the Federation than in Kirk's day. You know, Kirk was the frontier. This is... you know, 100 years later, and it's a little more settled. But I don't know. Episodes like this make it clear that everything really is very tenuous. It could take a single incident to rip the peace between two empires, you know, essentially. You have the Romulans are raiding at any point, and I mean, this incident gets figured out, and the governor is... you know, open-minded and honorable enough to want to seek the truth no matter what it really is. I mean, because obviously he doesn't necessarily want to arrest a Klingon ambassador, but that's what the truth says to do. So,
But what, you know, what I don't get about this is what is the ambassador's end game here? Because, of course, he wants Geordi to shoot the governor because that's going to cause some sort of rift. And that, you know, Kryosian independence, the governor is obviously on the side of the Klingon High Council and the ambassador is too. He doesn't necessarily want Krios to go independent, but it's going to happen because he kind of sets it up in the beginning where the Klingon Empire is a little weaker and they kind of will just have it. They'll let them go and then maybe conquer them again later.
Yeah.
But the governor doesn't seem to want independence, so it's sort of like a civil war, right? So what is the ambassador's play here, really? Like, wouldn't it make more sense for him to just kind of not talk the governor into allowing all this kind of stuff to happen? Because they don't need Geordi to...
Well, I mean, I don't think he cares about Kryosian and independence.
No, he doesn't, but what I'm saying
is... This
is
just, I mean, the Romulans probably promised him, you know, okay, well, when... you know, there will be a war between the Klingons and the Federation, and then when that's over, you know, we'll give you the sexiest ship in the Romulan fleet.
Well, right, but what I'm saying is it doesn't seem like it's necessary for Geordi to be brainwashed into assassinating the governor, because the Romulans and the Klingons that are working on behalf of the Romulans to undermine the Klingon-Federation alliance are already doing a pretty good job of it, and... yeah, they have an investigation going on to find out where these weapons are coming from. But at the end of the day, the governor seems about a hair's breadth away from just kind of leaving and starting a war with the Federation. So,
just based on the evidence of the weapons,
right? So why is Geordi involved at all?
I mean, that could be part of
aside from this needs to be linked to the ship in some way.
Well, here's the thing, and I mean, maybe this is kind of some of the unspoken subtext that the Romulans' love for planning kind of gets them in the end. Because you're right, if they had left well enough alone, they had this great plan to, you know, pretend there was these weapons, you know, and maybe there's the failsafe because they do begin to figure out that they were Romulan weapons, you know, with Federation, you know, chassis. But I think part of the implication is, the Romulans have these wheels within wheels plans that are so complex that they're going to putter around for a while and then just completely explode in their faces because they're too complex for their own good.
Yeah, I think that's actually an interesting read on Romulans. Yeah, the reason perhaps that they're not more of a power is they sort of get in their own head and they fall in love with their plans and these machinations and it becomes their downfall.
And you know, I think to a degree they almost. I mean, we've seen the Romulans not care when a plan is gotten because we'll get you next time or your failure. The failure of this plan is actually the second step in the larger plan. And you know, I think nobody in Romulans knows what the hell is going on. Like,
oh, I don't think
every single member of Romulan Congress has their own, you know, decade-long scheme, and half of them, you know, hit each other. So, I mean, I wish that the show knew that a little better, because you get the sense that they don't necessarily realize those full implications. But I do think it's funny the idea of an empire that is so in love with these Byzantine schemes that it doesn't realize that none of them are working.
Yeah, and maybe at the end of the day, the value of the Romulans in the Star Trek franchise is just to give us episodes like this.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Hey.
I do also want to mention that while Geordi did not get to have a bang in time on Ryza, Romulan Geordi apparently had a great time.
Romulan Geordi, who didn't really look like Geordi.
Well, he was black.
I was going to say, like, did they think, well, they're both black, nobody's going to see the difference? Because
I think maybe the implication there was that nobody really knew what Geordi looked like, and yeah, so it didn't matter so much.
You know, if you're going to go that far as to create a... I mean, they really couldn't have just gotten LeVar Burton to just do two roles in the same shot. Like,
it does seem like that's an oversight on the Romulans' part that the Romulans perhaps would not allow to be an oversight. They would have taken one of their Romulan Tal Shiar operatives and surgically made him look exactly
like
Geordi.
Like, that seems like a weird production thing.
Yeah, that's kind of true, actually. Oh, well.
Yeah. I'm glad it wasn't just me, because then I'm like, well, but by my thinking that they're different looking, is that really LeVar Burton and then I'm really being racist? Like, I was really worried.
No, that was not LeVar Burton at all.
I'm like, the hair isn't even the same.
No, I don't think the build wasn't the same. Yeah, I think he was shorter. I don't know. Whatever. It's what it is, right?
They picked a 6'4" blonde lady to play Geordi.
It was actually O'Dan.
Oh, my God.
All right. Well, I'll give this one...
4 visors.
That sounds good. Next week, we actually are wrapping up the 4th season, believe it or not. We're just moving right along.
So we're more than half done with the series.
Yeah, we are.
Three seasons left. Oh, man.
So we've got about a little over, what, 2/3 of a year to go?
Oh, wow.
I think it should be 36 weeks.
36 weeks. And then we get the movies?
No, sorry. That's
and then
not
we
right.
get to do the Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, no, 36 weeks. Yeah. So in 37 weeks, we will have the first TNG movie. Then in 38 weeks, we'll have the second, I guess. I don't know. I haven't thought that far ahead yet. But we'll figure that out.
I think we had a spreadsheet with like the next like 5 years of our lives planned.
Yeah, they don't need to know that. So next week, we are talking about In Theory and Redemption. So look forward to that.